Welcome to Champagne Sunday. I'm Lauren.
Hey, I'm Bonnie.
I'm Beth.
And we're going to talk about life
after divorce.
And living
the best life.
Best life and the life you love.
Yes, living the life you love on that other side.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Welcome. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to my actual front porch today. It is so nice to finally be back outside. So today we are going to talk about what it looks like to be supportive of other women. We have found the need for a support from a group of women. And so really just want to talk, what does that look like? And as a woman, especially who's been through divorce, if you could have had exactly what you needed from beginning all the way through, what would that have looked like for you? What did you need? And how does that now make you see other women and want to be there for women in your life?
I don't know. I think, you know, and this is sort of an, I guess the old adage is you literally never know what somebody else is personally going through. And I think that like going through divorce has made me a bit more cognizant of that. And that I'm less quick to be irritated with people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I, you know, we were just sort of pre-talking about this, but like divorce tends, anything that anybody's going through, we're speaking all encompassing here. However, divorce still tends to be a little bit taboo in that unless it's like close friends that you're talking with and crying with, people don't really want to address it. You know, like you were saying, when somebody passes away, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm sorry that happened. Like it, you know, or
yeah.
I'm praying for you or whatever. It's okay to do that with divorce too. You don't have to sweep the topic under the rug because, you know, Bonnie, you said it earlier. It is like a death. It's a death of your former life.
It's a death.
Yeah. And a lot of times I feel like people just don't want to address it, but it's okay to go. I know you're going through a hard time right now and, you know, I'm thinking about you or whatever. That's, you don't have to pretend it's not happening.
I think it's, even though we're in 2024, I think divorce is still a taboo subject and people, it makes people uncomfortable. I mean, it's just one of those uncomfortable topics because we've talked about it before. When you have a divorce, if you have couple friends, they don't know what to do with you. They don't know how to act around you. They don't know if they need to pick sides. Usually they do pick sides, whether they want to or not. It's very unsettling in the kind of shakeout period where people find out. You know, I think most of us didn't really tell people what we were going through until we were kind of way into the weeds in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a thing that you want to talk about. I was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like a failure. I didn't really want to tell the whole world. You know, I didn't want to wear a name badge that said, hey,
you
I'm
announce
getting divorced.
On Facebook. Yeah. Going through divorce.
Yeah.
This is why I feel like crap every day. And this is why I look terrible every day. And this,
this is why I changed my name.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to announce it. It's you feel embarrassed that, you know, now you have to figure out how to live a different life and you have to, you know, I had the whole, like, I was disappointed in myself. I think that's what it was. I was disappointed in myself. I wanted to shake myself and say, didn't you see this person was going to do this? How did you miss the signs that this was, this affair was happening? How did you, you're a smart girl. You're smarter than this. How did this happen to you? And translating that into your everyday life. I mean, I had friends, very, very close friends that knew what was going on, but only about one or two of them knew the actual everything that was going on because it's not something you want to announce to people. And now what has happened now that I'm this far beyond it is I can recognize things in people and it has given me much greater empathy toward women that are going through this. We talked about this pre-recording, how people, you know, you support mothers that are having babies or have had miscarriages or who have, but you don't, nobody really reaches out or ministers to, or there's not a whole lot of support for women who are going through a divorce. There's not. Mm-hmm. It's a huge field that is lacking.
Well, and it's such a humongous change.
Yeah.
Because we've talked financially, you've gone from two incomes to one. And for some of us, like me, I mean, it was the first time I ever had to budget. This has been the first time I've really lived on my own. Mm-hmm. I never really lived on my own. I had roommates or I lived with my parents. I was in college. Like, I never really lived on my own. So all of this was just such a huge learning curve. And then not only are we dealing with our emotions and this feeling of disappointment, all of that, we're having to help regulate and support the emotions of our kids. Mm-hmm. Like, we just became 12 people. Mm-hmm. You know, we are therapists, we are everything. And we no longer have that support of the partner who decided that we had kids with necessarily,
right,
to be making decisions and to figure out how to budget and even just to decide what to watch on television at night. Like, we're all of a sudden down with decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. Every single day. I mean, there's just so much. And to just have that one person that pops by with a quiche in the morning, with pieces of quiche, or just, you know, hey, here's something for the kids, or I'm thinking about you text, just really kind of, I'm not in this alone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the biggest gifts, I had a friend that came by and took my kids for like 3 hours. And, you know, I wasn't at the point where I could get all dolled up and go do something fun, but it gave me 3 hours, like 30 minutes, I sat in the floor and cried. Then the next 30 minutes, I was like, get yourself off the floor, wipe your face off, get cleaned up, take a shower, do the little things you can't do, journal, do whatever you need to do while your kids aren't here to see you completely have a fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then be ready when they come back. I think I spent a lot of energy kicking myself about being disappointed that this is how my life turned out.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of energy, like the majority of my energy, acting like everything was okay so my kids didn't feel like the rug was pulled out from under them. I mean, it was a lot of energy that I put toward that. And then as I moved through it, then I realized my kids already knew half of it and they needed to process. So we all started talking about it, mm-hmm. like truthfully talking about it.
Well, there's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like you just got to keep, you're not going to get there overnight. Okay. And you got to just keep moving forward, because I remember especially when I was, because I'm almost 2 years out at this point, but that first year was so hard because I did feel guilty. I mean, you feel guilty because you don't set out to break up your marriage like that. You don't set out for your marriage to fail. And so even if you weren't happy in it, there is some guilt that you're not able to finish what you started. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll never go, oh, I've been married for 50 years. Like, I think about that at church all the time when people come down for their anniversary blessings. I'm like, I'm never going to be able to say I've been with this person for 50 years. You know,
yeah.
Not that that was necessarily, but I think about that. That's something I'll never do. Right. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm 105, unless I live to be 105. Anyway. And I, you know, the expectations that you had for your life change. You know, you said you go from two people's salary to one. And that first year was so hard for me. I know we had Carolyn on several episodes back to talk about finances. But there's a lot of guilt with me having to say no to my son about some things. Like, he wanted, I can't remember what he wanted to do last week. But I had to say, we can't afford that. And he was like, what? I'm like, we can't afford that. Like, yeah. I can't afford to go to everything that everybody goes to. I can't afford to go out to eat all the time. Like, I have to be very, very particular about those things. And it took, I mean, there's a little bit of guilt about it. There's a little bit of shame about not having the financial stability, or not even ability to do, to say yes to everything. Yes. Everybody else says that's just, it's the new, you know, and it's okay to be cognizant of that. Like, whenever I ask somebody to go somewhere, I am cognizant of how much money they have. I think about that, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think I did that as much before.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does, you know? Make sense.
Yeah.
I think, you know, well, on that note, my kids were used to a certain lifestyle. And when we got divorced, it scaled back significantly. Mm-hmm. So much so that, you know, no is the standard answer and we can't afford that as the standard answer. But, you know, for the first couple of years, I was really harsh about that because I was under the gun to try to keep the budget and keep us afloat during a pretty difficult time. And, you know, everybody that gets divorced has a bad time with that. I also had and other people have circumstances. My ex had to be institutionalized for a little bit, like the first, right out of the gate, mm-hmm. like within the first 3 months of being divorced. So we had to deal with that. And then he was out of work for 8 months. So that was a lot of instability financially. And then, you know, fast forward a couple years, you know, we had the attempted suicide, and then he was out of work for another year. And my financial stability, I am stable. I am just not able to do a whole mm-hmm. lot. And from my kids' standpoint, I felt really guilty that they went from this larger lifestyle to a much smaller lifestyle. But, you know, I think we also pregame talking about some expectations, like especially for spring break and vacations and things like that. You know, I tried to make the staycation the new norm mm-hmm. at my house because it had to be. We can't just take off and go and spend money, you know, on things. But I tried to whittle it down and make it to be quality things versus quantity of things mm-hmm. that we're doing, and memories and experiences, even if it's a Broadway play or a music thing every once in a while, or even just a movie every once in a while, so that they're special. But, you know, all this keeping up with the Joneses and the over the top, and we have to take a cruise, and we have to go here, and, you know, we have to go to the latest and greatest vacation spot, that had to all go to the wayside. And never, that was never really important to me. I could afford those things in my past mm-hmm. marriage, but we didn't always have to do those things. But I think my children, I think I gave my children more power of disappointment than they actually had, mm-hmm. you know, because it was a disappointment that I had. It mm-hmm. was an internal disappointment that I had, not necessarily. I mean, kids will be up or down for anything, you know. So I think I was hard on myself about my expectation of what my life would look going forward as far as
the first year or last year, right after my divorce, I was like, okay, I need to like establish some traditions with my son that's just us. And he loves Disney World. So I was like, I'm going to plan a Disney trip. And I've been playing catch up since I paid for that Disney trip. So what I learned was there's just things I cannot do that I can't be expected to do either, you know, like,
yeah.
I've got to pay up front for something next week. I can't really, and then get reimbursed. I can't really afford to do that, you know, but so it's things like that, like to be cognizant of. And I felt this a little bit of disillusionment in the first year every once in a while where I was like, wait, did I really do that? Did I really get divorced? Did I really leave my husband? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then
I just had to talk myself through it that like, no, it's okay that you did this. You're much happier now, but that is real. I mean, like, those are the things you feel when you're going through it. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt that way a lot. But, you know, we were separated for so long beforehand mm-hmm. where he was in and out of different rehabs, trying to get a handle on his disease and all of that, that really, until he finally started moving on into another relationship and stuff like that, did I finally feel like we'd made a solid break.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, I can hand the torch of responsibility for him over to someone else. Yeah. Now, that relationship didn't last very long, but it did make me feel like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it, you know, a lot of it was just like, are we in a weird limbo? Is this, I don't know. It felt very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like the twilight zone. Because I think how people, I've never really cared how people thought about me. I know that's not good. But had a heightened awareness of how people perceived me
mm-hmm.
Before the divorce, through, you know, at the rocky part of the marriage, through the divorce and after the divorce, I think people's perception of me changed. It was a feeling that I had, and I'm not too sure that I was off base in a lot of cases, like just how people treated me, looked at me, how people went down on different sides of the marriage. You know, I think things were said that came back to me that I thought, that is not true.
Yeah. So like for us as women, knowing how we felt and like staycations and all of that, for me to support me, a great thing would be, hey, what do you want to do over spring break? Are you staying home? Not this expectation that I'm going on a European vacation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just sort of that, hey, cognizant, just accepting of whatever it is that we're doing, you know? So instead of feeling, so if we have new people who are getting divorced and all of that, it just, I think as a supportive women to be able to just accept them wherever they are and make sure we're not saying things in a way that sounds judgy on the other end.
Or expecting of
them. Yes. Yeah.
Like one of the things that I found right after I got divorced is someone in the church came to me and said, you know, what about your tithe? And I thought, dude, oh, I'm barely putting food on the table.
Yeah.
And it made me feel guilty.
Yeah. That happened to me too.
About God. But also at the same time, I'm like, I cannot squeeze blood from this turnip that I've been given.
Yeah. Not yet.
And it wasn't productive for me.
Yeah.
In a budgetary way or a spiritual way. And I thought, you know, sometimes you know, as a nurse, I try to meet my patients where they are. And it really doesn't take that much to go, oh, she just got divorced.
Yeah.
Things are still shaking out. It hadn't been that long. How about skipping her?
Yeah.
I don't think 100% participation is equal to making this person feel welcome spiritually and supported in the church. You know what I'm saying? I think you have to extend a little grace, and I'm terrible about doing it to myself. I do it for others, but I think when you recognize that somebody is going through a period of change, whether it be pregnancy, having a baby, getting married, getting divorced, dealing with the death of a parent, a spouse, a child, those are huge life-changing events. Well, some of them are happy.
They're big.
And some of them are not. But you have to recognize where a person is and not overshoot them all. Even in asking if you can help. You can't overshoot. You have to recognize that some people need a little more nesting, and they might want the casserole, leave it on the porch. They don't need that spend time with you for an hour and you witness them crying or moping or they haven't washed their hair in 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the casserole on the porch and let that be a good thing. Like, you just have to recognize what somebody's going through.
Yeah. And it's okay to recognize that it's big. Like, it's okay to recognize that it's not normal, or that you have a new normal, you know,
that's, or that it's not nice and presentable all the time.
Well, and every change is hard, even good change.
Mm-hmm.
Even if both people wanted the divorce and it's at everybody wanted, it's still change. Every breakup is it's getting over a habit.
Mm-hmm.
Even bad habits.
Grief process.
Yeah, and there's a grief process no matter who you are, what you are, how old you are.
Or if it's good.
In most cases, I mean, I think it's great when people can stay friends. My sister is going through a divorce right now, and they're desperately trying to get to a place where they can be friends. And they both want that. I will probably never have that with my ex-husband. And it's very weird. I mean, not that, I don't, you know, you get divorced for a reason. You don't get along anymore.
But at the same time, to be friends for the kid. But and just when just because had, you love someone.
When you've had that long with somebody, that you spent that much of your life with somebody, it is very strange not to know them anymore.
Well,
when they knew you intimately, you know? Right.
Well, now that's one thing. My ex-husband and I, as much as sometimes we didn't get along after the divorce, it's like we moved into this area where we considered each other extended family.
Yes. You did.
Was not...
You were friendly, but not best friends.
We were not best friends, but I did...
You're like, it was like you were cousins.
But if he called me in the middle of the night and said, I need something, I'd have been there.
Yeah.
And if I did the same... And he came and picked me up off the side of the road when I ran out of gas. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Right. If I showed up at his family Christmas after divorce, people weren't going to be shocked. You know, we still felt like family. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we'd loved each other for so many years.
Right.
And you can no longer love a person in that way, but can still respect the time you spent with them. Yes. And I guess that's what I don't understand.
Well, respect the past love that
you... Yes. Well, and yes. So, but I guess that's because of my ex-husband's disease, we were no longer in love with each other, but we did still have sort of a familial love for each other.
But I guess I just, since that was my experience, I don't understand spending 10 or 20 years with someone and all of this love and emotion on them and then having no respect for that on the other side. Do you know what I mean? So, but that's, but like I said, I'm short-sighted in that I have no other experience.
Right.
Right.
Well, not, you're not, but that is your experience.
Well, I think divorce brings up a lot of negative emotions, anger, disappointment in yourself and the other person. And fear. There's a lot of fear.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear.
Of how am I going to do this? How am I going to support my kids? How am I going to support myself? How am I going to move about in the world in my new role? And I think people get lost in their feelings a lot instead of thinking it through. Hey, what is the best? This is my outcome. What is the best way to get there? What is the best way to shepherd my kids there? What is the best way to take care of myself? And you tend to dump all your feelings and you know, react to your triggers instead of saying, hey, let's kind of rationally go about this. Because those are two different camps, how to rationally do it and how to feel your way through it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
You have to feel the feels, but you don't necessarily have to act on the feels.
Oh, I didn't want to feel the feels.
Nobody wants to feel the feels because they're uncomfortable. They're horrible.
Yeah. But you do have to get through those.
And I do have to remind myself that anger is part of the grief cycle. You know, I got stuck in the no anger. I didn't want to be angry. I didn't want to be ugly. I wanted to be Grace Kelly. Do you remind it? And my therapist kept saying, you know, I'm going to have to send you to somebody professionally if you can't be angry. I'm sorry to worry about you.
But, you know, that's, I go through that. And I still go through waves of where I just sort of distance myself emotionally from everything. It's just a much more comfortable place to be, you know, for a while, is to just kind of go numb and then come back. But, you know.
Well, I think if we treated divorced women like we treat women who have a baby, in that supportive and caring and nurturing kind of way. I don't think we nurture divorced women.
No.
I don't think society does that.
I remember going to my OBGYN right when when I was in the process of getting divorced, and I have known her for a long time. And they were like, okay, well, how's your husband? I was like, actually, I'm getting divorced. And she goes, oh. And I was like, no, it's good. She was like, oh, congratulations, man. And I was like, yay. Like, it was like a little happy party. So.
And I think that talking about women and getting divorced, part of being a friend, even with our friends, well, back when we had friends having babies who were being supportive that way, you watch your friend making mistakes, but you know you can't say anything. Because they're their mistakes to make. Or you say something and they absolutely don't see what you see. And the best way to be a friend is to just to stand next to them as they completely destroy their lives for a minute and be there on the other side to pick it back up. Not to judge or to yell or to be ugly about it. Just to be like, they're where they are. They're going to do this. There's nothing I can do to stop it. But as a caring friend, I'll be here on the other side.
You just have to love and support.
Yeah, to love and support. Yeah.
And, you know, you can do that in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
I had a friend that would call me. It was pretty, now that I think back, I thought it was random, but it was pretty much on the cycle of things. And she was my Al-Anon sponsor. And it's like she just knew the days. Every time she called, I'd be in the middle of a weep cycle. It was so crazy that first year. And I just think back on that and I thought, she didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually didn't even sign up for Al-Anon. She just knew the situation and she supported me. I mean, my support came from random people. I had a friend who helped me with a lot of things around my house. His wife and I were friends, and she would send him over with all his brothers to, like, when I got so pregnant I couldn't mow my yard, he would come and do my yard, or he would come and help me. He and his brothers helped me lay a brick patio at my house. Like, and it's like they knew, you know, I would never ask for help, but they knew. And he would show up. One time he showed up in my garage and I was in the garage. I would go into the garage and sweep out the garage when I really had to cry. So I was out of the house and nobody could hear me. And he pulled up in my driveway and was like, it's going to be okay. You just need to do this. You have days you just need to cry. But that kind of support, yeah, like just the recognition went a longer way than if somebody had dropped a casserole at my house.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I would have loved a casserole, but I'm just saying the support can come in different forms and from people that I didn't really expect that right from. So that was really good.
One of the best supports I got when I was, I guess really, wasn't even before, when we were getting divorced, it was when my ex was at one of the rehabs he was in. I became very judgy, especially of one of my dearest friends. And she forgave me. That was the best support. That in my weird grief, stress, anxiety place, I became incredibly judgmental. And the fact that she responded with grace and apology to me when I was being kind of awful. And I was kind of calling her out for not supporting me when I never really even let her know I needed support. You know what I mean? And it's so, but for her to respond to me with grace over my terrible behavior will always mean the world to me. And it's just different little ways that mm-hmm we can reach out and understand the person going through whatever. All right. So what are the ways that you would have felt most supported? Like, what are two ways that during that time that you didn't get or that you got that stand out the most?
I remember like at my main job at the school where I work, all the women that I work with were just very, and the men too, like honestly, everybody just was just very caring. And I would cry. I mean, like, it was a hard year. And I remember my department chair, who is one of my favorite people on the planet, I remember her saying, listen, you're going to drop some balls. Just make sure that none of them are balls that will break. And, you know, I mean, they there would be days I just had to go in and process it. Like, cause you can't, it's hard to do your daily routine like you'd normally do it. Like going to work can feel hard when you're going through something as,
yes,
as grief. Honestly, when you're grief stricken, and that's, yes, what part of it was, or when you're in a difficult situation. And the whole year I was going through my divorce, my ex-husband still lived in the house with me, and it was really difficult. I was very depressed. And luckily I worked for someone and with people that would just let me come in and be in whatever state I needed to be in.
I love the analogy of the balls.
Yeah. Like it, and I made it through. And they all knew I would, but like I got to the other side of it. And we joked that everyone has kind of traded off a difficult year because like I went through that. Then I had a colleague last year who went through something else. And then another one of my colleagues this year started. We're like, what do we do? We can't just trade off bad years. But I appreciated that I could be like that. And like, not that you don't want to, sometimes you can't. You can control your emotions to some extent, and I'm pretty good at it. But, you know, I would go in and my students could tell when I was sad or if I'd been crying. And it's not like I like went into detail with them about anything, but they just kind of let me be in that place. And they were very kind to me. They were gentle with me, and everybody was. And that was really helpful. And then I think just like, you know, don't expect your divorce friend to instigate everything you do together. Like, don't assume that they're busy or that they don't want to. Like, reach out to them too to just say, hey, you want to go grab lunch or want to go do something fun tonight? Because sometimes, like, every once in a while, I'll call Bonnie. I'm like, you want to go to the store? Like, I'm going to run an errand. Do you want to go with me? Just because, like, I'm like, oh, I've got this free time and, you know, where it might be fun to do that. Because sometimes we're alone in the house and we don't know what to do with ourselves. I've never felt like super lonely, though. I've not had that feeling, really. But you know, do call them. Do call them. Get them to do something. Like, it's not like we're, like, at home just putting puzzles together happy all the time, you know?
I think I have a couple of examples. One, when I found out that my husband was having an affair, my child was less than a month old. And in the next period of a month, I lost 30 pounds. Like, I couldn't eat. I couldn't concentrate. Yeah. My stomach felt like jello all the time. And I had a very caring priest who called me and said, I'm on the way to your house. Because he knew if he said, can I visit? I would say no. And he called me actually from my driveway. So there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah.
And I was a mess. And he came in and fixed me scrambled eggs. he he was just that kind of guy. Like, he knew exactly what I needed. Scrambled eggs are very easy to eat. Also, hard to mess up if you're cooking them for somebody. And he sat down with me, and it was like, oh, there is somebody out there that is worried about me. That's going to mother me when I can't even mother myself, you know, or my child. That's one example. Another one is when the divorce actually came through, my youngest child was in a private school. Luckily, it was a Christian private school because there was tuition to be paid. There was a new uniform to be bought for the year. I had no money. Like, this was one of the times when he was not working. And so I went to the headmaster because they give you this little thing that says, you know, you need to let us know if you're coming back to school and you need to pay X amount by this day, blah, blah, blah. Well, I couldn't do it. So I gotten really upset about it. And I finally got up the courage and I walked into his office to ask to speak to him. I told him what was happening. And he said, I hope this doesn't get him through. He said, we know your husband. We know he's good for it. We'll select you. Go upstairs and pick out a uniform. There was a used uniform closet. Go pick out whatever uniform she needs. Just write down what you got. It'll be okay. And I thought, it was like a relief that my child would have a place. But it was also a huge financial burden lifted off my shoulders, which that can be crushing. That has been very crushing to me. Y'all know money anxiety. And it stems from all of that went down during that period. And so I felt like, okay, my child has a place. So my child is squared away so I can breathe a little more. Do you know what I'm saying? It just lifted a big burden off of me. I had people that would ask me to lunch or ask me to do things or just support some weird things that I had to, you know, I had to close my shop. I had people that came and helped me inventory, like for 3 days in a row, so that I could physically get out of the space. Just those overwhelming big things that I had to do by myself. It looked like I had to do by myself. People would show up. And it has been amazing. I had people show up when I wanted to move here, even though they didn't want me to move. I had people that showed up to do that. And interestingly enough, none of them was family. It was all friends that I had made along the way. And it was, I had a friend say, Beth, you know, you've done this and this and this, so now it's your time to let other people help you, which was also sort of embarrassing and sort of very humbling. So, but I am so grateful for all the support, the unexpected and unseen and kind of out of the blue, weird kind of support that I got during that period that I would have never expected. From people I would never have expected it from, which was kind of interesting. You know, my best friends did support me and in different ways, but those are some examples of just off the wall, big things that I needed at the moment, in the moment, that I can only say were God thanks. They were people that God
inspired somebody to come and help.
He didn't just inspire them. He sent them to my doorstep to change the outcome of what was going to happen if it didn't happen that way. So, sorry. I can hear you.
I think, all right, mine is not near as big, but the biggest impact on me was my mom and my sister. So I have a tendency to allow a toxic person to destroy me before I walk away. Like, I would rather love to death then give up on love. That just tends to be one of my fatal flaws, I suppose. So my mom and my sister would see when I would start spiraling and they'd be like, oh, no, and come up with creative ways to pull me out. They had me think of, you know, who do you want to be? Like, what are the qualities of a strong woman that you, and so we'd list those. And they're like, okay, now pretend you're her. And then they took note cards and they each listed every single incident, alcoholic incident, every single thing that was done to my children or said to me, every single thing they could think of. And they put it in a file folder, a little file box. And they said, every single time you start, when you forget and you get that idealistic and you feel like this is something that needs to be saved, I want you to start going through this box.
Yeah.
Just remember. And it just, I mean, just that one little, you know, little thing was just, my mom would just pop over and be helpful. They would go and look at houses with me. I mean, just these little things that they would do, mm-hmm. you know, just to try and pull me out of that strange toxic cycle I would pop myself back into. So, you know, I guess that's it. It just, that was, realize I was doing it and just,
yeah.
Nope. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
I think that's one thing people are not taught, to be supportive to people in difficult times. You are taught certain, like, funeral etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come by, you see the person. What I realized when my mother was died, people are very caring. And this is not a slam. I mean, this is just how it works. People are very caring. They come to the funeral. They come to the visitation. They bring you food. And then after about 2.5 weeks, it's crickets. And what I found, because my mother died when I was young, I was at Alabama and I had to go back to school. I was like, okay. At the, like, 3 weeks to a month mark, I was like, it was so weird to me that life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And your life is forever changed, but the world is just still going on. I think I told you, like, I would sit in the lounge of the Cayo House and people were talking about their dates and what they were wearing. And I was thinking, I don't actually give a damn about any of this. This has nothing to do with me. I am in such profound hurt, yeah. loss, grief. I didn't even know if my socks matched today. Like, it was just such a it's like they were speaking a foreign language, mm-hmm. which a month earlier, I had been completely caught up in that. Which, you know, it was such a weird, and it happened to me at fall. So, of course, I was worried about who my ball game date was going to be before my mother died. But it's the same with divorce. It's like you live in a little microcosm for a little while. I say the first year, because mm-hmm. sometimes it's not really a year for other people. But for me, it was a full year of living in this sort of alternate reality. Of getting my stuff together and padding the way for my children and trying to lay down things for my future. It was just a weird, strange environment that I found myself in. I knew deep in my heart it was going to be okay at the end because this was what needed to happen. But it's sort of like you live in this alternate reality for a little while. And people are not trained to take care of you or. I felt not noticed. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to notice me or reach out to me during that period. And that was a grief process of death. But I think it's the same in divorce. People don't really know.
Well, it's not on their radar anymore. At that point, it's off their radar because the funeral's done. They've ticked off their boxes. And I think, talk about where you were. I think it's funny. We've talked about this in a little bit before. I think it's funny that now I can look, and sometimes I know when someone's in a happy marriage because they're paying such attention to ridiculous details on things.
Yeah.
Like the smallest things mean the world to them. And it's like, oh, they're happy. They're in a happy marriage because they have all of this room to care about all of these things that really have no consequence, you know, have no.
But
no
I think thing. Also, if you have a very firm base of security and trust. I mean, that goes back to Kubler-Ross, mm-hmm. right? You have that secure versus non-secure when you're an infant.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have that springboard of security are free to express themselves in a way that people that are trying to fight for that security, all that is kind of frivolous because you're just trying to survive when you're in survival mode. If you have a base of security, you can blossom. You can do this. You can do that. You're free to think about these other things because you don't have all that other stuff weighing you down.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I mean, people are taught how to do the grief thing and be supportive during a death, but not during divorce. And divorce is the death of a marriage, but you just feel like you're not supported.
It's one of those, in the South, it's one of those whispered words.
Oh, yeah.
She got a You know what I mean? It's not one of those. And then a lot of people, we're getting better, I think, but it's still, you know, there are those concepts, especially here in the South. You don't talk about the ugly things out loud. If you say them, they're like whispered under your breath and talked in the, you know what I mean? It just, and so, yeah.
But I, you know, it's one of those things. You see an area that we can do better. We can be better. We can be a better friend.
We can support each other.
We can be a better woman.
Or even a better acquaintance. Yes. Somebody you may not know well. I had a coworker when I got divorced. I had a coworker and I knew each other. We were in the same department and all. But she stopped me in the hall one day and say, hey, I want you to know I divorced when I was young. It was, we weren't married long. It was not near the same thing, but it was so hard. So I can't imagine after how many, ever many years you've been married that this is, so I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, don't know her. It was, it just, it meant a lot.
Yeah.
So just those little things. So,
yeah. I think recognizing it, in someone else is, or where somebody else is in it as a woman is a big thing. You can't do anything until you recognize where somebody is in their journey. And then even if it doesn't feel comfortable saying something or being supportive, maybe not directly toward the divorce, but like your friend did, you know, I've been there.
Yeah. Or even if just, hey, hope you're doing well today. That has nothing to do with anything, but it would still be, it's throwing sunshine onto somebody that may need it.
Yeah. I think it's important. I think women do not support women sometimes in the way that they need to be for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a friendly, non-competitive way.
Yeah.
We're all a big family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what are y'all doing this week to live the life you live?
I start spring break tomorrow and I am doing exactly what we talked about earlier, having a staycation. So I am doing a lot of, I've really been trying to live more simply. I don't want things. And so I'm trying to get rid of a lot of things. Like, so I'm going to just continue. And I've done a lot of just purging. And we've talked about this at length, but I'm going to do that for myself and my house and in my office as much as I can, just to get rid of things I don't absolutely need or really want to keep for, a, you know, anyway, that's what I'm going to do. And then just, I don't know, eat lunch, make food. Make food and go on walks, and it's beautiful right now. So I'm excited about having a week with good weather just to focus on what I personally need to do. Because I've had a lot of work lately, and Sunday we closed our show, and so I'm kind of able to go. Because I'm a person, I can multitask, like I'm a pretty good multitasker, but when I'm in a show mode, it's like that's the only thing. And then as soon as that's done, I can pay attention to other things. Like I'm looking back yesterday, I calendared through January of next year because I can. I don't have a show to work on. I'm going back through and I'm like, oh, there's text messages that I haven't responded to because my brain can now focus on that. So anyway, so all of that kind of like housekeeping stuff.
Well, my daughter's on spring break this week and I contemplated I had an offer to go to the beach. But I didn't really want to take the time off. So we are doing staycation and we are enjoying. I slept in for an hour today.
Ooh.
I know. So luxurious. And so I am working from home mostly this week. So that's kind of a change. And I feel like I'm on vacation, even though I'm not, because I'm not traveling. I had traveled one day this week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a little mini vacation. And I'm trying to enjoy the weather. And I am trying to pick up my house. I need to mow my yard. I need to like sweep up my porch, get ready for spring because now it feels like it's kind of finally going to be here. But I'm trying to fix better food and eat better and be conscious of what I have for my intake. So, and in all areas, I'm trying to finish my book because I have to host the book club next week. So that's one. That's my big goal. But just kind of have a relaxing weekend.
Well, this has been my spring break. I'm like, wow, it is Thursday already. What have I done? But yeah, I mean, I've spent the week getting some stuff done in the house. Spent the first 2 days sick. Spent 48 hours in the bed. It was terrible. So glad to be on the other side of that. But I'm going to enjoy being in my house and kind of straightening up and getting some things. We got part of my son, he and I worked on getting his room cleaned out. We hadn't cleaned it out since we moved in when he was in high school. So there are things that we needed to get out. And, you know, when you move, you just find and shove things in the rooms and put them in places. Well, this in this life that he's living now, it's different. So there's a whole bunch of stuff we were able to get rid of, put in storage or give away. Like we've got those piles I need to actually now take and physically do something with. And so I think I'm just going to enjoy this. And then Beth, you and I talked about, you know, we're trying to branch out and actually go places and do things and create little mini adventures, that maybe going over to Huntsville on Saturday and just kind of spend some time downtown, wander around, and that sort of, just kind of a.
And we had a fun girls' night out.
We did.
We had a fun girls' night out last night.
That was kind of refreshing and a break. It kind of midweek.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That I never
yes.
do.
So and we're that which right now we've now this is now month two. We've stuck to our. We're going to explore one new place to eat every month.
Yes.
So we've got, yeah.
We'll have to pick the next one.
Yeah, we love to, when we put things on calendars. We do it.
We do it. Look at there.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies. Y'all have a wonderful week.
You too.
You too.
Thank y'all for joining us for Champagne Sunday.
See you next week, girls.
Yeah, cheers.
Have a good week.
Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers.